This is QuakeCast 59. Hi, I'm Dump Truck DS. Welcome to the QuakeCast. Our guest today is Juzly, who has released The Punishment Due, which is a fantastic five-map mini-episode using the Copper mod, and we'll talk in depth about all of that. Also, Michael Markey is joining me on this episode as a co-host. Michael is a fantastic musician and in a very short time has become a monster of a mapper. So I'm very happy to have Markey here with us today. So let's get into our interview with Juzly.
Probably got a PC around 96, I think, end of 96, probably Christmas. And I remember seeing a lot of Quake in magazines, and I picked it up. I think I got the shareware version. But I didn't get massively into it. I probably, didn't even complete the whole thing. And then kind of similar for Quake 2 when that came out. Like, I liked it. I played enough, like, online to, like, I was the best of my school friends, but, like, not actually any good. But then, like, Quake 3 came out, I think, right at the right time for me in terms of, like, age I was, like, how much free time I had. And so I just played absolute ton of that, got really into it. And I'd been like teaching myself to code. So I got really into the modding side of it. I was actually one of the co-owners of the Quake 3 modding IRC channel. I got really into that kind of side of things. And then after a while, it was kind of like, oh, you know, I'm making these mods, but I need to actually have maps for my mods, else, you know, it's not going to work. So started to learn a bit about mapping, ended up in the TerraFusion IRC channel, where, like, all the people who actually know how to map were. And still, like, not really unlike doing now. Quake. It was all, well, yeah, not much like now. I was kind of just still on the Quake 3 side. And actually, I thought the people who were still doing Quake 1 mapping in, like, 2000 or whatever it was were a bit weird. But I remember, like, some of the folks that are still around now, like your Bowels, your Lunarons and stuff like that, getting that stuff done. So, yeah, that was kind of my first exposure into Quake mapping, was, like, just thinking the other folks were a bit weird.
Yeah.
But yeah, like, then I just kind of got to university. I had a big hard drive crash where I lost all of the stuff I was like working on. So I lost like maybe 2-3 maps, and kind of just got out of it. And I was playing more like serious Quake 3 at that point as well. So
that's sort of like a
big break.
That's sort of how it works, right? Like, you know, when you first join any sort of enthusiast community, everyone's a weirdo, right? And then slowly you become one of those weirdos.
Yeah. It took 20 years, but I got there.
Yeah, I mean, back in the day, I didn't play a lot of single player of Quake, you know, back in 96 and 97 when I was playing. Didn't play a lot of single player. I mean, played the mission packs and the main game, and there would be something impressive that would come out, you know, like Zerstora or what have you. But didn't play a lot. It was always multiplayer, or if a mod had multiplayer along with the single player. So, but yeah, I would think that, I think my 96 self would be like, yeah, there's single player. Who gives a shit about that?
Yeah. I remember being really excited about Nahara, though, when that was coming out. Like, that was the one Quake single player thing that really sticks in my mind, just like getting, like, seeing all the screenshots and videos and stuff for Nahara and being like, wow.
Did it live up to your expectations?
Well, it had like a 4-hour cutscene at the start, so
yeah, I didn't make it past
let's,
that.
Let's say yes.
With all the same voice actor.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I think at the time, though, like, the single player stuff, if you could get past the cutscenes, was actually really good.
By all accounts, I still want to find a version I can play without those cutscenes, because it's just, I can't get past them. Yeah, I just can't do it. I can't forgive it.
There's a console command you can do. Like, I think nowadays it's not aged that well, but back in the day, it was really exciting.
All the cutscenes were just demo files, right? Couldn't you just sort of purge the demo files from the package?
I have no idea. Yeah, back then, I didn't even try. And these days, I downloaded it fairly recently, but I didn't even bother trying anything. So it could be. They're probably demo files, but don't know.
But then you wouldn't have context for the box rooms.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And the wonderful lighting. But anyway, let's not bag on that too much. Like, I'm sorry. I don't mean to be so ugly. I don't want to be ugly. I already got a jab at Terrafusion in, so, but I have to behave myself. But I do have an important question. It's a viewer. Yeah, can you tell I had my shot today? I have a listener question from, this listener wants to know why you're missing a texture on your start map.
Yeah, because I don't listen to advice. It's basically is. I know who that is.
Can you guess who that is?
It's Bal.
Well, it's one of the Bals of the world, right? Along with Lunarans. So obviously you've known Bal for a long time, or at least the name, right?
Yeah. Like when I decided to get back into Quake, I suppose I not decided, but once I started picking up Quake again, I was kind of one of the reasons that I found the mapping scene was I was like, oh, are any of the people that I can remember from back in the day still around? And like Bal was one of the first people that I looked up and was like, oh, hey, yeah, still making maps. Well, they folks still around, which is really cool.
Yeah, there are some people that haven't left the community at all. It's insane. It's crazy.
I didn't actually think that anyone would remember me, but like people are like, were you that Juzzly? And I was like, hey, yeah.
Now, you did Quake 3 Fortress, not to shift gears too suddenly there, but you worked on Quake 3 Fortress. Was it an official part of the mod, or you just did a third-party map for that?
Oh, I just did a third-party map. There was a little bit of time where it was possible that that was going to make it into the actual one of the releases, but I think at that age, when I was like 19 or so, I was just terrible at taking feedback. So it got to the point where folks were like, you know, into the iteration of playtesting and stuff, and I was just done with the map at that point. So I was just getting really annoyed with having to do feedback. So it didn't make it.
Gotcha. Yeah, cause I didn't play a whole lot of that, but I remember that mod fondly. I mean, we definitely played at a few LAN parties. I didn't really ever play online, but anything with Fortress in it at that time was just like instant download, check it out, you know, see what it's up, you know, and that one lived up to it. So
yeah, that was like the gold standard of Quake 3 mods. Like it was really professionally done. So
oh yeah, big time. Cool.
Juzzly, as you mentioned, like you mapped for a Quake 3 like a while ago, but then now you came back to Quake 1. Bal, similar story, right? Like he had a long hiatus and then he came back. I'm pretty sure Lunarin also had like a period when he was working in the industry where he wasn't really producing anything in the Quake scene. But so what brought you back?
So I was kind of like a random mishmash of stuff, really. Like I ended up playing Wrath. I can't remember why, but like for some reason I found Wrath, and I actually started making a Wrath map because I was like, oh, hey, this is Quake Engine. I know how to map for that. And so I came up with this huge, ambitious layout for a Wrath map and spent probably 2 months just like hammering on this thing. And then I was like, oh God, this is not good. Just like getting nowhere, burning myself out. So I was like, I'm going to make a really quick Quake map just to, you know, actually get something done, finished. And so that was what became my AD Juzz map, AD Juzz 1. And at that point, I'd finished playing Wrath and liked making a Quake map, liked the feeling of like releasing something. So I carried on from there, really.
Yeah, I just literally just played that because I tried to play everyone or as many maps as I can. I got only a couple more to go, but I definitely played that one just right before we started recording, and that's a hoot. A lot of funny, you know, IT jokes in there. It's good stuff. It was fun, and you know, it's funny you say like a Quake 3 mapper. Like you could totally tell.
I think Quake 3 was like, if anything, it was like too high fidelity to me. Like there was people putting out like really artistic stuff and like you know, stuff with shaders that just looked amazing. And that was really too much for me. I've not got much of an artist's sensibilities or anything. So like Quake 1's, I think, just about the right fidelity for me, where I can make something that looks good for Quake. But Quake 3 was, you know, a bit too much.
You can see a lot of Quake 3 DNA in Just Lee's layouts, because there will often be like maybe multiple atriums that sort of loop in and connect in around each other, and you know, looping from one atrium to the others. Oftentimes, some of the maps will have like lanes in them too. Like there will be like a bottom lane and like a second mm-hmm. floor lane and a top lane,
right.
Maybe
another tier.
Yeah, and it almost feels like they could be, without much effort, refashioned into DM maps.
So punishment due. Let's talk about that. Get into your motivations. That you did two AD projects and then you transitioned over. I'm assuming a Coppertone came first, and is that how you kind of fell in love with Copper, or what was the timeline and your motivations there?
Yeah. So, I mean, to start it all off, going a bit further back, like UDOB Underdark Overbright was like one of the first things that I played when I got back into Quake, and I just absolutely loved it. So there was always that kind of like Copper love in there, I guess. And then made a couple of AD maps because I also love AD, and just felt like AD at the time was what I wanted to work on. But then after Coppertone, I was like, yeah, now this is the time. I'm going to do some Copper stuff. And really, I think before Coppertone Jam, most of my maps, all of my maps that I'd done had taken me like a couple of months, and I could never think of like doing anything of like 5-6 maps where it was going to take me, you know, a year to do. But at Coppertone, that map obviously took 2 weeks, and I was like, wait, I can make a map a bit quicker. So I was like, well, maybe I can put an episode together. And that's really like, I think that's how I prefer to play, is like a episode of shorter maps rather than like one massive map that, you know, I can't just like drop in and out of quite as easily. So that was kind of how I decided I was going to put that together.
Nice. Yeah, I will say that it's been a while since I played UDub, and I don't know if I even finished it. I'm embarrassed to say that, but I definitely played a good chunk of it. And I bopped around. I always bop around all the maps and look, even if I don't finish playing things. So I can't remember, did I play the whole thing? But yeah, I mean, and people have been commenting on how it feels like the, I don't want to say spiritual successor, but like a proper, you know, sequel to UDOP. So that's high praise indeed, because the two people that made that, it's insane. But I got to say, one thing I love about playing your maps, I am never bored. And you've got really innovative gameplay with the monster setups, and your secrets are, I love your secrets because they're not super hard, because you kind of slap your head when you find them. You're like, oh yeah, mm-hmm. Duh, it should be right there. That's where the secret should be. And you know, it's very instinctive. I don't know. I don't know if anybody else thinks that way, but I will definitely go back to 4 and try to find all the secrets I missed, because I was kind of, I don't know if that's my favorite one, but it's definitely one of my top two maps in the pack. Mm-hmm. And that was just a blast. I had to break it up into two sessions, but it was a big button hunt, and I kind of sighed when it started. I'm like, oh God.
Yeah.
Button hunt. Okay, cool. Here we go. But it's so amazing. There's so many tricks and turns. And then, yeah, as you open up the map, it's just giant sprawling thing that just keeps surprising you. So kudos on the setups and, you know, innovation and gameplay. Marky, what do you think about? You've got much better insights than I do on that stuff.
So I was going to ask, speaking of UDOB 4, what on earth inspired you to do that giant funk train wall that you have to shoot the buttons as it moves around quickly?
That was amazing.
Yeah.
I can't remember really. I kind of thought, I was just reading through the Copper manual on the Funk Train stuff.
Sorry, yeah, I said UDOB 4. I meant to say Pun 4.
I knew what you meant. Yeah, so I was just kind of reading like some of the Copper manual on how you can lock different path corners and stuff and get trains moving in different directions. And it just kind of, and it just happened naturally when I was playing around with it.
Yeah, Pun 4 is quite a marvel, I would say, just because nonlinear maps are really hard to do. Because a lot of times you can consider a map is, or you know, any sort of like Quake or Doom map or something, it's almost like there's a story to it, like a script, but in terms of like how the gameplay flows and how it connects, and that's where the pacing arises from, and the rising drama and the tension and stuff like that. So when you have a nonlinear map, you completely break that mold, where at any point the player could be experiencing like your script, right? And then they could just turn around and just leave and just go somewhere else. And just, it's like, yeah, it's like starting and just, you're in the middle of an episode of Seinfeld, and then you just, oh, you know what? I'm going to watch, I'm just going to pause right here and just start up an episode of Friends, right? So it's like, how did you go about like reconciling that aspect of like pacing? Like,
it was very tough for me actually, because I think naturally I really want to control like every aspect of how a fight's going to play out. Like, I don't even like to have monsters following paths before you discover them, because I'm like, well, you never know at what point of the path they're gonna run, like the player's gonna meet this monster and stuff like that. So yeah, it was I don't really know what I ended up doing really. I just kind of try to keep each area separate, and so you can have that level of control in each different room without everything spilling out too much into the other rooms. But I don't know. I don't think I would call Pun 4 a huge success in terms of that kind of thing. It kind of, there's definitely been some comments of like, you know, there's a lot of filler in here, which I can kind of see. There's some rooms where you just like, you're fighting some Hell Knights and stuff, and it's pretty unexciting. But
that's sort of the appeal of a nonlinear map, is that you as a mapper kind of have to throw caution to the wind in that regard. Mm-hmm. And it's sort of up to the player on whether or not, or how much enjoyment they draw from the experience, right? A nonlinear map sort of asks the player, almost forces the player to immerse themselves into it if they're going to enjoy it.
Yeah, true. To be honest, I would never have made Pun 4. They were all going to be kind of similar. Like Pun 3 would probably be the most complex one. And then I played Mazu's Jump Jam map, where you're finding all the different, I can't remember what it
was. Engineering Mania. Now, yeah, that's an incredible map too.
And I was just like, wow, it just blew my mind. And I just like had to make something that tried to be like that. And that was about the time when I was ready to start Pun 4. So I was like, okay, I'm going to give this a shot.
You know, one of the things that makes UDOB really great, which also makes Pun really great, is that both UDOB and Pun, the mappers of those respective projects, they establish a sort of communication. They establish a communication with the player, right? Where they'll be like, this is what my secrets are like. Dump Truck just mentioned earlier how your secrets are really satisfying because they're never too hard to find. Then you're like, oh, yeah, that's where it's supposed to be. A lot of that comes from you having a healthy communication with the player, and establishing this is the kind of stuff I like to do. I'm going to do it more in the next map, more in the next map, more in the next map. So putting all that stuff sort of leads up to Pun 4. And that's why I think it works. Pun 4 would not work in a vacuum. If it was like a solo release, it could be frustrating. But as a part of an episode, especially deep into the episode when, you know, it's sort of, we get you at that point.
I think like Lunarin had to do that in UDOB, because he was, you know, he was doing this thing where he's trying to introduce his copper mod, and he's like slowly building it up and up. And I just like the way that ended up, like, even if you know what the copper changes are, I like the way that worked out, playing with like the earlier maps are simple and gradually introducing stuff, and then it gets more complicated after that. So that was definitely something that I was trying to do, like start with some simple maps that introduce, you know, how things are going to work, and then ramp it up.
So how did you plan, like specifically, how did you plan that map out? Did that just organically keep growing off and just arms, or did you sketch this out? I mean, was it all planned on paper and you just executed, or Was it improv?
So yeah, Marky has seen me map, and I think he said something like, "I can't work out how your maps come together because I look at you and there's just lots of random brushes everywhere," which is like, it. My mapping is chaos. I have an incredibly short attention span, so I'll work on an area for a few minutes, and then I'll have like something pops into my brain, and I'll be like, "Oh, over here, I could do this," and then I'll go and work on that. And it actually happens to me in all things I do, like at work where I write code. I'll be, you know, writing some stuff, and then something pops into my head, and I'll go and do something else. And then sometimes I forget to come back to the initial thing, so I just find like half finished lines everywhere, and that's kind of like PUN4 is I guess the pinnacle of that way of mapping is that I work on a bit, and then I'm like, oh, this could connect to this like this, and then you come around here, and so it's like there's no real planning to it. It's just kind of iterating as you go, and I think that means that things take quite a long time, because I do end up like redoing a lot of stuff where I'm like, oh, you know, this didn't quite work out. I'm gonna have to go back and change it. And I don't really block out either, so a lot of the times it'll be throwing away pretty much fully detailed stuff where I'm like, oh, okay, it didn't work out.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
So I will say, and I don't know why this just jumped in my head, but there's a section of the map, like I said before, you know, there's constant surprises throughout, and I just mean on every level, brushwork, you know, setups, monsters, you know, you didn't overdo spawns. Thank you. I appreciate that. which I don't hate spawns, but I hate when people overuse them. But no, there's one section where you've got like the mountain area. And to me, it was the introduction of kind of the rocky areas of the map. And obviously for other players, it may not have been, but you had like this wooden section where the wood was all rotten and kind of messed up as it led up to. And it was just such great environmental storytelling. I just stopped for a second and just kind of paused it because I had monsters around me. And I was just like, that is freaking cool, man. Never in a million years would have thought of that. So something like that just, is that one of those things that pops in your head, or you had it in mind from before?
Yeah, I think that was just like trying some stuff, see what works. Like there was loads of detail like that I ended up thinking it didn't look good and threw out. And actually I was about finished with PUN4, I think, when Ziggy released the Verdant Dawn thing, which just like looks kind of similar, but takes that detail to like the nth level over what I've done. And it was a bit like, oh man, this has just kind of blown this out of the water. So that was a bit of a weird moment for me. But yeah, what a map that is. It's kind of just happy that people have seen my map and not been like, well, this is like Burnt Dawn, but not as good.
Well, I don't think you should sell your visuals short in any capacity. There's a certain delicate touch that, you know, one needs to have when detailing, and I think you've got it, because all of your maps have they all have like striking shapes in them, and the way that you actually move through the levels, that there's like a nice visual flow. So yeah, I would not say your visuals are ever lacking.
Yeah, good color palette. Thanks. And strong theme throughout, and everything's distinctive too. I mean, that PUN5, my jaw hit the ground in the opening shot. I was like, oh, this is so cool. And the music too. I mean, we could talk about that, but I mean, you should have to me, it sounds like you have a vision and you're telling us that you don't.
yeah, that's probably fair. Like I think I have a vision at kind of like an overall level of how I want things to fit together. But the vision, yeah, kind of evolves as I'm doing it.
Yeah. I can attest to that. Like, as someone who's made, you know, a collection of music or maps or whatever, a lot of times it feels like you don't have a vision when you're working on it, but then when you look back in retrospect, it turns out that there was one. You just didn't know it was there.
So shall we talk about music? I'm glad we have Marky on, because he's an amazing talent and has made in a very short amount of time a gigantic impact both on our ears and our eyes. And our keyboard and WASD fingers. So, so Marky, go ask some music questions, because I just found out today you did all the music, right? Is that right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay.
Apart from the start map, which was Alex with a K.
Right. Okay.
Yeah. So, I guess, you know, there are two ways for me to approach this, right? I could approach this as like it with like layman questions or like total audio engineer nerd questions. So
go nerd.
Definitely the layman questions, because you'll find I'm not much of an audio nerd.
All right, well, let's start off easy. What software do you use to make music?
Embarrassingly, Fruity Loops. Not the choice of the pros, but that's what I have available to me.
You'd be surprised. FL Studio is really popular. I mean, a lot of the Doom 2016 and Doom Eternal soundtrack was sequenced in FL Studio.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Yeah, so I guess your music and pun, it's obviously ambient and suitable for Quake, but it also sort of edges away from Quake in the sense that it's less grimy than like the standard Quake soundtrack. You actually have like a lot of clean, strong like note choices, or like you can like hear chord progressions happening. Your synths are not as like noisy, like they're more like pure almost. So I was gonna say, like, where were you drawing inspiration for your pun soundtrack?
So I think really this is as what I feel like I'm trying to do is be as melodic as I can while also being Quakey. Like I think if it was outside of Quake, I'd make stuff that was a lot more melodic and a lot less ambient, but because it's in Quake, I'm trying to rein that tendency back a bit, really. So there's a lot of like, you know, trying to express a melodic theme without actually having that in there quite as much, maybe.
Did you have like a sort of checklist or some sort of process to try to make the songs sound different from each other? Because I know that that's like a real struggle, especially when you're working with ambient music.
So I think because I actually made the music, like I would make the map and then I'd make the music. I didn't like leave the music all to the end or make it up front or anything. So it was actually quite easy to get it like sounding different, because I had no recollection of what I'd done on the previous stuff when I was making the music for like the next map. So that wasn't really so much of a problem.
Yeah, I could see that working out. Yeah, because, you know, same thing goes with music. If you're working on like five different maps at the same time, right, a lot of your habits are going to bleed across from map to map, just like they would in music.
What do you listen to when you're mapping, or do you listen to music? Or you're listening to the baby monitor probably, right?
Yeah, so a lot of baby noises. Yeah, that's definitely a thing. Or like I've got a three-year-old toddler as well, so there'll be quite a lot of him coming up and saying, "Daddy, play." So that's another thing about my mapping process, is I'll be trying to fit things in around like playing with my son, or you know, feeding a baby or something like that from the bottle. But yeah, the rest of the time I listen to quite a lot of metal and punk and stuff like that while I'm mapping. But I don't really hear it. It's just kind of, you know, it's all sort of stuff that I'm so familiar with that I'm not really listening to the music. And sometimes I'll get to the end of the album or something and I won't even notice that it's finished. So I wouldn't say it was a big part of like what I'm doing when I'm mapping.
This is sort of a derail, but you know, speaking of family and stuff, and the times, of course, COVID have any impact on how much you've been mapping or how you've been mapping?
I think so. When I was doing my Wrath map, which was just before I did AD Juz 1, it was like just pre-COVID, and so I was still like commuting 2.5-3 hours a day, and so you're like getting a lot of mapping time was quite tricky, because you know, then you work all day, you come home, it's quite late, got a family and stuff like that. So it wasn't so easy to get a lot of mapping time. Whereas I think now with COVID, I'm working from home, I've suddenly gained 3 hours back that I can spend actually focusing on the map quite a long chunk of time. That's been slightly offset by, as been mentioned, I've got like a 10-week-old baby now, so you know, it's a bit offset, but definitely COVID has helped my mapping focus, I would say.
For a moment there, I thought you were going to say, I've definitely gained some COVID weight because I have. I thought you were going to go there.
God, me too.
I have definitely gained some COVID weight, yeah. That is true.
So now the reaction to Pun, first of all, it came out of the blue for me. I think other people around knew what was going on, but kind of came out of the blue, and the reaction has been really great. Now tell me, what's it like to look on Funk Message Board and see, get the reaction you got?
Yeah, I mean, it's been pretty amazing. It's been quite exciting. I was a bit surprised, really. I know from like the feedback from people who were playing the beta versions and stuff that, you know, people liked it, but I wasn't expecting like quite as much positive reaction as it's got. And it's certainly to hear people say, you know, this is like spiritual successor to UDOB is almost a bit embarrassing for me. And I'm kind of hoping that Lunarun doesn't hear that or doesn't play it. One of the two. But yeah, it's been quite surprising how positive everyone's been about it. And I've been really pleased.
Oh, Lunarun, I don't know him well, but I know he's a team player and a good sport too. So I don't think he would feel that way at all.
Oh yeah, yeah. I have a currently unreleased map that I designed to punish the player. No pun intended. No pun intended on that either. I designed a map recently, or I finished a map to punish the player as much as possible. Just the most difficult, grueling experience ever. And I made Lunarun play it on hard and. His feedback was great because he said, you know, I really appreciate that this map exists. not to say that he, or rather, you know, maybe he didn't expressly have a great time with it because of how mean it was, but, you know, he sees the intrinsic value in things.
It's really funny. It took me three maps in to realize all the titles were puns. Yeah, that just shows you how sharp I am. But anyway, I had a good time looking at the titles. But yeah, so Let Them Eat Quake was a kind of a co-venture between Fairweather and yourself, and kind of I knew that was a Fairweather map because it had some hallmarks of their work, and you know, great always great stuff too. So how was it? What was it? Is this your first kind of collaboration with someone?
Yeah. Yeah, definitely first collab, and the way that came about was I was initially, so the whole point of the thing initially was I was going to remake my Coppertone map, like expand on it a bit and make that as part of the project. And I was talking to Fairweather about that, and they were like, I don't know how I feel about that. Why don't you, you know, I'll throw a map in there for you. And so the original plan were they were going to do like the whole thing. But then, you know, they're working really hard at the moment, didn't have time. So what ended up happening was the main, like big meaty encounters in Pun 2, and kind of the visual style were set up by Fairweather. And then I came in and kind of like almost overlaid a layout on it and did the kind of the boring bits that are plugging those big encounters together. Were mine, and yeah, I think that really shows that Fairweather's bits are like really like signature style. So it's pretty cool that like I feel like I've had a mark on that map, but it's like still really you can play it and see that's a Fairweather map.
It's always nice when in any creative field when people can tell a work is yours. It's
yeah, for sure.
Like if you got your own signature touch on something, then you know it definitely shows that creator has had a lot of growth, right? Because initially, I think most of us start out imitating our heroes in some capacity, and then once we start deviating from that to do our own thing, that's when you know you truly speak through your work, right? And I think that really shows through with Punt because. You know, I get people making the UDOB comparisons. I do think that some of the comparisons are very surface level because, you know, maybe the texture palettes are similar in some spots or maybe the lighting is similar or something like that. But to me, they all feel through and through like thorough Juzzly experiences. I don't know.
Yeah, and I will say, yeah, thematically, you know, those, you said you used the words grunge earlier, and those, the UDub was, from what I recall, it was messed up. It was like Quake had been abandoned for a long time and we're rediscovering old maps. That's what it kind of felt like. And I will say, with the exception of kind of a couple sections in Pun 4, you know, I didn't feel that. So they definitely feel distinctive. It doesn't feel like you were riffing on UDub, but I think in a general sense, quality wise, and that's a really high bar that someone set for you, and you've obviously attained that. So
I think that just how much I love UDub, I think some of that kind of shows through. I've probably played through that like 10-15 times.
Jeez.
So I think naturally just like some of that shows through when I'm mapping, just because like to me that's kind of like the premium Quake experience. So I think that's natural that a bit shows through, but then I guess I have my own style. I just kind of, in my head, I'm just throwing maps together, but I guess I throw them together in kind of a similar way every time, which is where that style comes from.
Now, let me ask, and you guys both have, like I said earlier, you have a lot more experience with Copper than I. What do you guys love about Copper? I mean, is that it? What do you guys love about Copper? What's the draw?
Shall I go first, Marky?
Yeah, you go first.
You're the guest.
Yeah. I don't know, for me, it's like, it's partly the gameplay just feels that little bit tighter. And like, that's the whole point of the mod, right? Is just to tighten it up. And partly just like the mapping experience is feels really clean as well. Like everything feels like all the entities fit together in a way that feels like they've been designed, rather than kind of a, oh, let's add this, which, you know, just appeals to me as like as a software engineer. It appeals to me like the way everything fits together and feels like it's actually a piece of software.
It shows a lot of restraint on the coding side, because, you know, now that I can kind of look at Quake C and understand what I'm looking at, I get what he was doing, what Lunarin was doing there. And it is really elegantly done. It's not overdone. He did exactly what he needed to do. It was like a scalpel, you know, as opposed to like a shovel, like Prog's Dump. It's a shovel. And Lunarin was like a scalpel, kind of cutting out the bad bits and the gristle.
And I think actually like AD is almost too much for me. Like I can't, as some people played my Quake 3 DM7 remake, and I just like thrown every monster in there, and they're like, you know, you got to pick a set of monsters and stick to that. And I just find it really hard to have so much choice of things to do.
I would say, for me, I really like Copper because I think it brings out the best in a lot of the maps that are built on it. In my opinion, Quake actually has kind of a strict design, not dictated by any maps or mappers, but just dictated by how the game is actually programmed, right? The way monsters interact with the player, the way the weapons interact, you know, the distances that certain monsters are effective, the way you can introduce monsters to the player, all these different things like that. I feel like at its core, Quake is a really simple game and works at its best when approached in really simple surface level interactions, right? So typically, I think that a lot of fluff, like, you know, I amongst friends, I always make fun of like, you know, like Funk Breakable. Like Funk Breakable is such like a ubiquitous thing. It's in every mod, right? But there will be times where I feel like it was like really poorly misused, and it really muddied the communication between the mapper and the player, which I feel is like key in a level's design, is that that communication between the mapper and the player is sacred and it cannot be corrupted. Because then you start getting weird, bad habits coming from the player. You know, maybe they're hitting, you had like a wood plank be breakable somewhere in the map. So now the player's smacking every piece of wood in the map and ruining the experience for themselves in that regard. Or, you know, you get a lot of weird knock-on effects if you're not really careful with all of the with all the extra bells and whistles, right? And Copper just sort of throws all that in the bin and says, that's not necessary to make good Quake. This is all you need to make good Quake. And I really appreciate that. The quality of life improvements just in the FGD from the mapper side are very nice. And of course the weapon rebalance too, like there's the subtle weapon rebalance is excellent in my opinion. I just think that it's just Quake on its own, vanilla Quake is perfectly suitable to make the best shit you've ever seen in the game. And Copper just, polishes that up a little bit, just sprinkles a little bit of, you know, a little bit of powdered sugar on it.
Yeah, I agree. I agree with everything. I mean, you guys just said, I mean, it's certainly a tight is the best way to kind of describe the Copper mod. It's tight and the Quake C is tight. You know, the visuals are tight. Just those small kind of, you know, MDL, you know, ammo boxes, the little simple things like that, that all add up. It's very cool. I had a freaking thought. I'm sorry, guys. I'm a space cadet. It's gone. It's long gone. So Jesley, whenever I can't think of a question to ask, I always kind of ask, well, what is next? Can you talk about kind of, are you taking a break? Are you chomping at the bit to do some more things? Are you going to try different things? What's next on the agenda?
So I'm involved in a couple of packs that will be hopefully coming out this year. Just single maps in those. And then I don't know really. I'll probably take stock after that and see where I'm at. I'd kind of like to do another episode, but it was, you know, 8 months of pretty solid work. So whether I go straight into that, I don't know. I would say I'm not feeling like standalone releases are really as much for me. I did it and it was, you know, it was fine, but I didn't feel the same satisfaction that I feel like putting a whole like thing together.
I will say a lot of the people in the Quake community, whether they're mappers or players, that were really shocked and surprised by, like, you know, the late 2020 releases, right? Like you got Dwell, and then you got Apox of Enmity, and you know, all these like big episodes seemingly coming out of nowhere. They are not ready for 2021, let me tell you that.
Yeah, the level of just the little, I mean, you guys probably know a lot more of what's going on than I do. I know of three projects, and they're pretty big. I mean, one is massive, and the other two are, I'm sure, will be huge projects. And gosh, four really. So, and then that's not even including just all the singular things people are going to do for the 25th anniversary and all that stuff. So, because I've been trying to, my goal is to try to get the communities together, at least on a website, you know, so say, hey, you know, 25 days of Quake, you know, for the 25th anniversary, and just like ideally, like on a May, you know, whatever, May 8th or whatever we start, you have like, hey, a map from so-and-so, a music pack from so-and-so, or a speed run event, you go join it. So I'm hoping we could get that going. But I know, yeah, like you say, there's a lot coming by the middle of the year, and some of them will slip, I'm sure. Some of them will miss the birthday, but it'll still be in the birthday year. And it's all great stuff. So we'll have to talk offline. You have to tell me all your secrets. So you're a father of two little ones. So what's it like to try to map with the little ones in the background?
My three-year-old is just kind of learning that he doesn't have to do everything that we're said or that we've told him to do, or he can, you know, just maybe not quite tell the truth on some stuff. And it's a bit like, oh, you know, our beautiful little boy is becoming not such a beautiful little boy. So yeah, we're definitely were, you know, expecting that to ramp up over the next years.
Well, and it's got to be tough. I can't even imagine being a parent during COVID, where you the lockdowns and things like that. I mean, God, I'm so lucky because I have a separate space to work in, you know, And so I can get away from everybody and just work quietly. But I've got buddies at work that have little ones like you do. And I just, oh my God, I couldn't imagine. I can't concentrate as it is when I have peace and quiet. So if I had distractions, boy, you know, I'd be drinking more. Let's put it that way.
Yeah. I mean, I work upstairs, but like I hear, you know, you hear the daddy, where's daddy from downstairs. And it's tough to like stay focused on the work.
I'm coding.
So, yeah. So at what age have you decided to introduce the little ones to Quake mapping?
Oh boy.
Oh, I had not thought about that really.
I think 9 is the acceptable answer.
Is nine the age? Yeah, I guess.
Well, that's what Jay Paul did. He had his daughter wanted to make a map and she was 9. She made her first map and it's way better than my first map. That's for sure.
Yeah, I played that actually. It's pretty impressive. And I'm at the stage at the moment where I've managed to convince my son that if I'm on the computer, it's work. So I'll be there mapping away and he'll be like, Daddy, have you finished work? And I'm like, ooh, not yet, you know. Some tough work going on here. But I imagine that'll, he doesn't really understand gaming yet. If it's like, if it's on the computer, it's work. So
right. And that's good. Just keep it that way as long as you can. Trust me. Well, I have one other question that I remembered what I was going to ask you. This is such a trivial little thing, but I just played it not 3 hours ago. Mm-hmm. What was that shootable button in Pun 5 above? There's a central area that's earlier in the map, and it's a big cluster with all the lava pits, you bastard.
Yeah.
What the hell was that?
It's actually broken. Like that. Okay. By the end of the thing, I was like, kind of done with like tweaking all the finer details, and I kind of went, look, there are going to be some bugs in it. I'm not going to catch them all. I'm just going to put it out there. So that was one that slipped through. You're meant to stand on like the pillar in the middle, and it drops you down into a thing where there's like a lightning gun or something. I can't remember exactly what, but it doesn't quite work. So even if you're standing in the right place and you shoot, then nothing really happens.
Because that's when I decided to go G-O-D, right? So because I was just could not make it. I mean, I just was wondering, what the heck? I keep hitting it. I know I'm hitting it. Anyway, okay, question answered. Thank you so much. Marky, do you have any? I always want to say Michael. Michael, Marky, do you have any other questions for our guest?
So, you know, I know that certain members of the Quake community have taken it upon themselves to personally email you all of your texture alignment problems.
Yeah.
So do you plan on fixing those?
Probably not, just because like I think if certain websites, you know, didn't have a versioning thing going on, then I would be more inclined to go through and fix all the things. But I kind of like it, just like, you know, this is what it is, guys. I'm not going to keep patching this thing because I want to move on to new stuff.
You're not going to George Lucas it? Yeah.
No.
That's it for this episode. Thank you so much for being a loyal listener to the Quakecast. We appreciate it. Thanks to Michael Markey for being co-host and for his fantastic music. And thanks to Juzly for stopping by virtually. We'll catch you on the next episode.